Welcome to the Dude Catholic Podcast. I'm your co-host, Adrian, here without the main host, Ramon. Now, Ramon's a little bit sick, and we tried recording the intro and outro, and we were handling with an unforeseen adventure. We had Ramon being sick. I mean, it was just an interesting time. I think the enemy's nervous. We're making the devil a little bit scared because they know this conversation is one of those that can make people shift gears, if you may. This wrap-up episode is what the series was actually building up to. The whole idea of venture comes from this desire for us to venture out into the deep. It is the great adventure that we undertake when we hold God's hand as our Father. And we say, let's do this. And so, I'm not going to build it up anymore. Here is tandem surfer, world champion, ninja black belt, coast-to-coast motorcycle riding, Bear Wozniak. And he's going to share a little bit about this idea of venturing and how appropriate it is for what him and his ministry do. And here we go.
Our ministry, Deep Adventure Ministries, our creed is that the most radical thing you can do in life is abandon yourself to the wild adventure of God's will. And there's just nothing more thrilling than saying yes to the Lord. Because first of all, when you say yes to God, you become not less of who you are, but more of who you are. God gave you your spiritual DNA. He gave you that beautiful, unique soul. And with very unique gifts and talents and inclinations. And when people think that when they give their life to the Lord, they're going to have to become something that they're not. But actually, you become more fully alive because you're following what God had in mind for you. And God has in mind for us, first of all, happiness. He wants us to be happy. Aristotle talked about how the pursuit of happiness we should all do that. And in fact, he said it by the way you become happy is by living a life of virtue. The four cardinal virtues, justice, self-mastery, temperance, and prudence. But he didn't know that we had a fallen nature, so St. Paul added the three theological virtues of faith, hope, and love. But when you abandon yourself to God's will, you are going to find yourself to become more and more and more happy. That doesn't mean you don't have adversity, but it means that you have a joy in your heart because you're living a life of virtue. And it's so cool when you're following God's will, he often asks you to do things that you know you can't do unless you grow. And so he helps you grow. Like when I got my first degree ninja black belt, our motto was, lead me to the rock too high to climb and I will climb it. And it comes from King David saying, by thee I can crush a troop, by thee I can leap a wall, by thee I can bend a bow of bronze. And of course, as a ninja, we had to climb walls. And so it was something I had to grow to become more and more. You know, we're made in God's image, but we're really not very much in his likeness, you know, because we have a fallen nature. Like some of the family, my son Jeremiah, man, he just looks just like you. But he's not, you can see his face and the way his mannerisms, he's just like you. He's in your image. But when you see his personality, he's not like me at all. You know, he's different. So our goal is to be in the image and likeness, to become more and more like Jesus, to become more and more like God. But that's the great adventure, abandoning ourselves to God's will. There's no more thrilling way to live than that.
Wow. You are one of those people that you see on posters, too, because I don't know if any of our listeners have ever seen someone surfing with a lady standing on their shoulders. You've done that, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I'm a world champion tandem surfer. I've surfed around the world. And my wife and I now, I still compete, but I'm no longer trying to win world titles, but because that's like going to war, and we surf for the beauty and the romance of it. But, you know, they're very, very extreme lifts. Not just standing on your shoulders, but maybe she's doing maybe her arms are in a lock and she's kicked into a handstand over my head, or I put her feet in my hands and lift it so she's standing over my head. So it's extreme, but it's beautiful. And surfers know about flowing with God's will. Because, first of all, surfers, for the most part, like I said, I compete if they need me to compete, but mostly surfers don't compete. They go out and play. You know, we go and play with the waves. Most people don't play. They say, I go play golf. No, you're going to go try to beat someone at golf, you know. I'm going to go play tennis. You're not playing tennis. You're trying to beat someone. Surfers just go out and play, you know, and we have the greatest time. You know, have the greatest time doing that. But once you kind of get into that attitude of not having to beat someone, but just to be the best that you can be and enjoy the wave to the utmost, you learn how to flow with the Lord. Like a surfer doesn't dictate to the wave, this is what I'm going to do. You have to be responsive to the wave. The first thing you do as a surfer is you go down to the beach, you scope out the swell direction. Like right now, I'm looking right out at the ocean from my window, and there's kind of a small swell. But surfers know that you have to turn your back on the aina, on the land. You have to be able to turn your back on all the temporal stuff behind you, the cars, the traffic, the building construction. The aina is always changing. But when you look out at the ocean, it doesn't change. So people, the first thing you have to do as a Christian is to do what you said at first, to do with less, to detach from the things that, from earthly possessions, from earthly things, just detach and then paddle out into the deep. And then what we do as surfers is we wait. We wait. And we don't just take the first wave. We wait because we want the cleanup set. We want the big one. And we learn to wait. But then when you wait, that's kind of like us having our eyes on Jesus in Eucharistic adoration, Lectio Divina, Liturgy of the Hours, the Rosary. But then when the wave comes, when you sense God's nudge that there's something he wants you to do, then you have to turn and you always paddle with all your might into the wave. And the bigger the wave, the harder you have to paddle, the more you got to want it. Like my son Jeremiah towed into 85-foot surf. He was towed in by a jet ski, but for him to let go of that tow rope, he had to really want that wave because it was a killer wave. So you, when you paddle into a wave, you always take off at the peak. You don't slide in somehow lower. You're always dropping in from the peak. And so it's a matter of total commitment. And there comes a point when you totally commit to the Lord that you're no longer in control. You know, that wave, the big wave, it owns you. And when you drop in with all your might and power to obey God's will, you're in for the ride of your life. And the beauty of it is, like, when you're looking at big waves, people riding them, you don't really have a sense of how big and beautiful that wave is until someone goes out and drops in and catches it. And then by looking at the size of that body on that wave, you get a sense of the dimension and the beauty of the wave. And the other thing is, sometimes you don't even see the person. You just see the wake of the surfboard carving white lines through that face of that wave. The way we live our lives, the way we carve and surf our lives, should reveal to people the power and the glory and the beauty of God. It shouldn't see us, in other words. And of course, the ultimate thing for a surfer is to drop in and be totally covered over by the barrel, to be totally hidden in Christ. And then when you come in, when I come from the surf, and maybe some people have been observing some really good waves, when you come in, they never say, wow, man, you're amazing. You were awesome. That was incredible. So what they do is they say, that was a good wave. Yeah. So they're giving glory to the wave, not to the surfer who surfed it. So there is just this kind of way as surfers, we know to turn our back on the aina, paddle out into the deep, wait on the Lord. And then when the Lord says move, because you've been waiting, because you've been in his presence, you hear it. And because you've been in his presence, you have the power to turn and paddle in and go for it.
You know, I was kind of afraid that that if I brought out surfing as an analogy to our spiritual life, that I would kind of just over-spiritualize the whole thing. But just hearing you speak about it, I'm like, that's the series right there. You have less of our mediocrity, you know, just giving less importance to ourselves and more importance to the wave itself.
Power of the Holy Spirit. And, you know, I wrote a whole book about that. My first book, published by Hachette, was a bestseller, Deep in the Wave, A Surfing Guide to the Soul. And so I kind of use that analogy to go through the different journeys of spirituality, you know, through detachment, enlightenment, the unitive stage. But I go through that whole journey in that book of that type of Catholic spirituality. So there you are. Surfing is a great allegory for the spiritual life.
Absolutely. And as you were speaking, I had one question, because a lot of guys give into passivity. You know, a lot of us, we just think, oh, we have to wait. You know, we have to wait for that perfect wave. But how do you know, or what's the best way to discern?
Well, the thing is, you know, God, Thomas Aquinas said, is total action. He has no potential. He's fully active, fully complete. And so there is a verse that says, those that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings. They shall run and not be weary. And so the word wait has the connotation, actually has, I think, in the, when it's used in the New Testament, to mend a net. So it's a fisherman preparing for the next time he goes out. Maybe there's a storm or whatever, but it's just not the time to go out. He's preparing for the next venture. And that's why, like, in my life, when I've trained for my black belt, or I've paddled the Molokai Channel, it's one of the most treacherous channels in the world between Molokai and Oahu, 30 miles, or I've pedaled my bicycle across the United States, or I've learned to fly an airplane, or I've skydived, or all these other things, I'm training myself in fortitude, in determination, in having a vision and pursuing it, so that when the vision from the Lord really comes to really lay down my life in service, I've trained for it. You know, whenever there's a verse in Habakkuk that says, write the vision down in words big enough so the one that's running can read while he's running. So it's a picture of a messenger running with a message from the king to throughout the land. And when God, so there's a sort of thing where you need to, you know, it's not the doing of it, it's the preparation of it. So whenever I have something that I feel God's calling me to do, or just something I want to do, I get a blue notebook out and I start taking notes about my thoughts about my new radio show or TV show. And as I begin to write things down, it gets more clear. And I start figuring out, well, what are the obstacles? What do I need to do financially to do this? What do I need to do physically to train for this? What do I need to do, you know, to make all this happen? And I see the obstacles. And then I run while I'm reading it. And I pursue that goal. And in time it becomes a reality. But it's not waiting passively; it's actively waiting. It's preparing. And when I trained for my ninja black belt, I trained. And you know, the test was 6 months long, and we culminated in a few days up in the mountains. But I was training for years for that moment of accomplishing it. So God, sick and tired of wet noodles. My mom. It says, it's like any wet noodle. Like if he was laying on the table in front of you and you pushed him, he would just give way and bend. You wouldn't be able to make him move or do anything. And so many men are just so passive, and it makes me sick. It's like the Lord said, I wish you were hot or cold, but you're lukewarm. You're just kind of sitting there like, you know, lukewarm, you know, milk or something. And one of the biggest areas I see and I hear about from the younger women is, the men are too passive. They don't even ask us out on dates. Or if they do ask us out on a date, they don't, and we get closer, they don't pursue marriage. And I just call them cowards. And so it's just time for men to be men again. I don't talk about masculine spirituality anymore. There's like a whole rainbow of masculinity out there now, according to some people. I just get down to earth. It's manly virtue. It's time for manly virtue. And not to apologize, but remember, manly virtue is not machismo. It's laying down your life for the people God's called you to serve.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we've been trying to hammer through in our podcast, that what manliness is not so much showing off our strength and just pushing everyone around. It's harnessing that violence that might be within us, that competitiveness, that stoicism, and putting it at the service of the beloved. Otherwise, we violate the purpose of it.
Yeah, what does Aquinas say love is? Love is willing the true good, and love is self-donation. And we also, you get to the point at some point in your life where you do good for someone, because not because of what you get out of it, but because it's going to be a blessing to them. But that isn't even enough. We need to get to the point where we're doing good and loving others, not for our sake and not for their sake, but for God's sake. Peter, if you love me, feed my sheep. feeling your own personal power is really cool. When you're paddling out, it's really cool. But there's nothing like feeling the power of the wave. You know, that's a whole different dimension. What was Paul's favorite word in the New Testament? Was it love? Was it faith? Was it grace? His favorite word was dynamos, power. This work that God has you to do is to be moved, to move in God's power. And the only way you move in God's power is to be in His will. You can't ride a wave unless you're in the peak, you know, dropping in. So the whole idea of moving in God's power is to be with Him. And so I always challenge men, I basically tell them, if you're not spending an hour every day with the Lord, first of all, you're missing out. Secondly, you're a poser, because you need to present yourself to the Lord, spend time with Him so He can do His work in you. And you're not spending time slaying dragons in prayer for the people that, you know, God has put into your life. So prayer is really the key. Prayer, spending time in Lectio Divina before the Holy Spirit, in prayer, the Liturgy of the Hours. You know, men will go, well, I don't have time to pray. I got to get to work. I got to provide for my family. But for example, the word Liturgy of the Hours, the word liturgy means the work of the people. So the very first work that a man should do is to pray. And then God will give you clues that you kind of find out, well, this situation came up today. And while I was in prayer, I was reading that. Here's the solution to this situation. And it saves you from spinning your wheels and gives you traction and direction so that you really are productive when you're doing your work, if you start your day out in prayer.
One of the both nuisances but also a blessing in disguise is that I have a long commute to work. I have a long commute going from Whittier to Englewood, and it gives me time to reflect and to pray. And for a while, you know, me having my ADD brain, I could pray a rosary for like a whole hour and a half if I was left to my own devices. And so I had to be a little bit more intentional. But it's not hard to spend an hour in prayer. It really isn't. It may be hard to spend 5 minutes in prayer. You start getting antsy. But when you made up your mind to do this on purpose, it becomes so much easier. And like you said, you know, you get so much more out of it. And we're spoiled. As Catholics, we're spoiled. We have the Lectio Divina. Ramon and I kind of alternate between a couple of novenas that we do. There's so many traditions, so much richness that's in our faith that I mean, we'd be dumb not to.
Yeah, people get caught up in, well, I shouldn't be reciting prayers. I should be just talking to God like He's right next to me, you know? And for a long time, I struggled with that, especially Protestants have this feeling that their prayer life should be, Lord, I love You, and this, and Lord, will You help me with this, or whatever. You just kind of, and I found that when I did that, I would kind of run out of things to pray sometimes, you know, or most of the time. And basically, there was nothing new that I was saying. I would be praying for this situation, or loving the Lord, or praising Him. And I just found out that I was being redundant anyway, but I was just repeating my prayers. So I learned that the whole beauty of the Liturgy of the Hours and praying the Psalms and the Mass and the Our Father and the Glory Be and all of these prayers, the Rosary especially, are not just vain repetition. They're only vain repetition if you're being vain about the way you do it. But these prayers just lift us up and carry us along, you know, especially the Rosary. For me, it's the most powerful weapon that a man can carry. When you walk into my house, you'll see my black belt hanging at the entryway, and my rosary hanging right with it. Because I want any intruder to know they probably don't want to come in. And secondly, I know that rosary is more powerful than any ninja skills that I have. So men need to pray the rosary for people that they have, as we say in Hawaii, kuleana. In Hawaii, the word kuleana means stewardship. It means responsibility, but it means much more than that. In Hawaii, if my kuleana is to carry these surfboards down to the beach every day if I was renting out boards, and someone else said, oh, he's got to take those down, I'll grab some of them and take them down for him, I would be offended. And I would say, brah, that's my kuleana. You know, when you have a kuleana, it's an ownership that you have. It'd be like someone coming in and your living room and putting in the TV channels or something. So men need to see their kuleana, and they need to take stewardship over it. Like, you know, Adam had a kuleana for Eve. But when Eve was tempted by the devil, where was he? Did he pray? Did he intercede? Did he intervene? Yeah, he didn't intervene, though. And so men need to see that the intervention, that child that you're so frustrated with, the rosary. And I say in the rosary, you'll see instant results always, but you know that the first battle is a spiritual battle. And so if you're not praying the rosary every day, it's like a child walking through a war zone in Lebanon or someplace, and there's bombs going off all around them, and they're bending down and picking up a broken toy. They're clueless to the fact they're in the middle of a battle. And most men live their lives as if they're not involved in a spiritual warfare. Their families are being, there's bullets going all around them spiritually. You know, grab that rosary and cover your family in prayer. And the other thing is men need to be with other men. If you don't have a group of men that you get together with once a week or once every other week, where you challenge each other, maybe read like my book, Deep Adventure, The Way of Heroic Virtue, is meant for situations like that, where you can read part of the book and then talk about it and open up at a gut level and say, not talk about politics, not talk about football, not talk about work, but talk about the nitty gritty of your life. If you don't have a men's group, then it's your kuleana to start one. Men need to gather together. When Nehemiah went back to Jerusalem, he was like put in charge of the returning exiles there. He was put in charge of rebuilding the temple. And it was amazing what disrepair it was in. And he challenged the men to rebuild that temple, the temple walls. And so the way Nehemiah reads, and God didn't waste any time doing this, but the first four or five chapters are just simply naming that this man and his family rebuilt the wall from here to here. And this man and his family rebuilt the wall from that point to this point. And it goes all the way around the walls of Jerusalem. A man and his family, a man in the domestic church, rebuilding the walls. But those men had a relationship with other men, because when they began to be successful, the local people came and they started to attack them. And so when one man was building, another man would stand there with a shield and spear to protect him. And for those who were carrying supplies, they would carry mortar in one hand, but their sword would already be drawn. And when there was a problem, the ram's horn would be blown, and they would run from one area to another to help fight. And so men need to see that they need to rebuild the walls as the leaders of the domestic church, but they cannot do it without relationship, genuinely deep relationship with other men. If you don't have a men's group, it's God telling you it's your fault. Go start one.
Oh, man. Talk about being called out, right? Talk about being church. That's it right there. And we're missing that. You know, I think we've taken in too much of that lone wolf mentality, and it's hurting us. It's hurting us very deeply at the core of our communities, because we are meant to be in community.
Well, there's nothing more miserable than a lone wolf. In my cabin in Montana, up on the north fork of the Flathead River, 4 miles from Canada and about a mile from Glacier Park, there was a lone wolf on my property. You know, a black wolf, luminescent green eyes. He was angry. And the reason why is because he had been forced out of the pack. He used to be the alpha male. There's no one more unhappy than a lone wolf. They're not happy. They're miserable. So the lone wolf approach, I agree. We need to challenge each other, equip each other, mobilize each other.
Oh, man, that's a lot to chew on right now, you know? But it's necessary.
Yeah, well,
it's something that we need to hear. It's something that we need to get after and move and get and just make it happen, because our families are suffering because of this. And we're like those two things, being too passive and trying to solve the problems of the world by ourselves. Our church is hurting so bad right now, and we can't put the blame or the burden on people who may not even want to do something about the situation. It needs to start at home, and it needs to start with men. And that's kind of the call to action that we're trying to get out there in front of all these men who are listening.
what happens to passive people is they get fat. You just look at it physically. If they're not out challenging themselves physically, their joints start to break down. They get fat, and they're not able to do their mission. Eventually, they die young. So,
yeah.
You know, God made us to face adversity, and we wonder why when we do the Long Ride Home TV show and we're going through the freezing rain, why do we love it? It's something about men being together and facing a challenge. And there was a guy here that wanted to come out here to Hawaii. He said, my therapist told me I need to take on a hobby. So I think I'll come out and I'm going to learn to surf and I'm going to surf. You know, dude, man, you don't need a hobby. You need a challenge, you know?
Yeah.
And he came out here, he lasted 3 days and got a ticket, you know, 2 weeks early and went home. Men need a challenge. And we need to help each other rise to the occasion.
Oh, man. I've been taken to church today. This is just so good for my soul right now. I really want
too.
To thank you for joining us and for just being so open, man. I mean, I was just trying to scramble to get just a few minutes of your time, and I really appreciate just putting yourself out there at such a short notice and just being there. And I just want to let you know that I really appreciate this.
I look under every kind of rock I can find to find men like you and your brother. So I'm looking forward to having you guys on my radio show.
Wow. I hope you heard that last part, because I'm psyched out of my mind about it, and so is Ramon. Can't wait for that to happen. Look for it after May. It's pretty awesome to hear that again as we're listening to this podcast. If you have not made your way down to deepadventureministries.com, that's deepadventureministries.com, go ahead and do that. Join Bear's Mug Club. Sign up with your email to get some free stuff in your inbox that it will increase your manly quotient and most importantly your holiness quotient so that God may recognize you as his own. Join Bear's Man Cave. It's good for the soul. It'll lead you to a private Facebook group where men encourage each other to be who God created them to be. Don't miss the Bear Wozniak Adventure on EWTN Radio, Sirius XM Radio. You can watch it on YouTube. You can sign up and subscribe to it via iTunes Podcast. And also, don't miss the Long Ride Home TV show. Season 1 is in the books, where he rode coast to coast from Florida to California. I believe the next season is coming up pretty soon, where he's going to go from Florida to Alaska. Also, before I forget, this book that Bear mentioned, I mean, I was geeking out about it because I thought I was going to over-spiritualize surfing. You can read all about that in Deep in the Wave, A Surfing Guide to the Soul by Bear Wozniak. And there's also this other book called Deep Adventure, The Way of Heroic Virtue, where Bear dives into the virtues. Go on deepadventureministries.com so you can tap into all those resources that will make you a better man, a better son of God, a better husband, a better father. Dude, just be better and help us be better. Know that we're in this path together. So pray for us and we'll pray for you. Ferrum ferro, aquitur. And as Bear says, and so did the Cristeros back in the 1920s, Viva Cristo Rey.